I always like to start out with a warning. This moment does contain extreme joy, so prepare for a spontaneous elation. This fall, I've been working on with some material on it's called Wholehearted Living. Brené Brown, who she wrote a couple of incredible books, Gifts of Imperfection and Daring Greatly. And as we're looking at this, the quote that came to me this week was, "You're stronger than you think you are, trust me." And that was said by none other than Superman. Yeah, now I can see people better. This is good. And you know, as I was thinking about Superman and the heroes, and we have, in our culture, we have these archetypes of always creating heroes. Superman, this little test here on your memory, faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound. Okay, need your help here. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman. So you have this incredible man who came to our planet, found himself with strength beyond his wildest imagination, but he knew that he was so strong, society would not accept him. So, enter Clark Kent, this meek, mild-mannered reporter that was able to fit in with society. And I thought, how much is that like us? We came here, these divine beings, but something inside of us is just afraid of the power that we have. So we present ourselves as this meek, mild-mannered creature like a Clark Kent. And the idea of having really strong people, it goes back, it's always been around. I was thinking about in the Bible, in the Old Testament, where you had Samson. Samson, his name in Hebrew, means sun-like. And metaphysically, it's really about the physical strength that we get through a spiritual discipline. And we know that from things like Aikido and different martial arts that really tie in the spiritual with the physical movement. But sometimes what happens is that as we go on our spiritual journey, this is an Old Testament story. So whenever you're reading Old Testament stories metaphysically, it's an early part of our spiritual awareness. And there's a lot of bumps and bruises and growing pains along the way. So Samson got his reputation by having this incredible battle with a lion where he killed a lion with his bare hands. And word spread even without internet and Facebook. Everybody kind of knew what this man Samson did. And Samson was the last of a line of judges, so he was quite well known in his time. But besides this, what happened was it kind of went to his head. And after that, he really became quite a bully. He lost a bet with some people about a riddle that he had, and in losing the bet, he had to give them 30 new outfits. So he was so angry with losing the battle that he went out and killed 30 men and took their clothes and gave them to the people that had won the bet from him. Another time, there was a little falderal over some women, a woman that he was involved with, and he didn't like what the town had done, so he tied a bunch of foxes together with their tail on fire and burned down the food source for the village. He was also a bit of a womanizer. Now, this doesn't sound like anybody you've heard on the news lately, but... Just get that the archetypes in the human mind, it's so incredible to see these stories happening again and again and again. And it's also a really good thing for us to look at, because whenever we look at these characters in the Bible, remember, those are parts of us. That we have those times when we have that spiritual awakening, we have the spiritual strength, and then we can abuse it. We may forget that it comes from that connection with Source and start believing that we are separate again. So in Samson, you have this Nazirite versus this very angry, bullying man, both in the same being, those kind of the yin and yang expressions, the best and the worst. A Nazirite, by the way, is somebody who takes a vow not to drink, not to cut his hair, not to touch a corpse. And there's only two people in the Bible that were Nazirites for life, and that was Samson and also John the Baptist in the New Testament. So Samson had a weak point. Because no matter how strong you are, there is always a weak point. And with him, it was cutting his hair because it broke one of his vows. And as you've probably heard the story, as it goes, Delilah, you know, woos him into revealing his secret. He gets captured, his eyes get put out, and he gets brought back down to his knees. But during that time that he's having that dark night of the soul experience, his hair regrows, he reconnects with spirit, and he regains his strength and enables... with his strength to take down some of his people's enemies. And so it is with us, that we all have these weak points in our life, but we also have the ability to reconnect with spirit and overcome them. As we know, kryptonite was the weak point for Superman. But what I didn't know until I started working on this was there are four different types of kryptonite. We all know about the one that makes him weak. But what about the one that makes him utterly reckless? He just gets really kind of silly. Then there's the one that gives him animalistic superpowers. But my absolute favorite is the periwinkle kryptonite. This made him into a very suave dancing prince. They should make a movie on that one. When we talk about this idea of vulnerability, and most of us don't like that part of ourselves, it's really such a paradox, because the part that we're vulnerable is the last thing that we want to share with somebody else. But when we meet somebody, that's the first thing we want to see. Isn't that interesting? Once we know somebody's vulnerable, there's something that feels safe about connecting with them. There's something that allows our heart to open up in a sense of compassion to them. But yet, we don't want to show that part of ourselves because it feels too vulnerable. It feels too scary, if you will. So it's really looking to that part. Where are we going to house our soul? Can we be brave enough? Can we be strong enough to actually step forward and to step into our weakness, our vulnerable parts, so that we can truly connect with one another on that deepest, compassionate, most love exchange type of energetic relationship? I think that our kryptonite, our weak point, is always our own self-love. That when we talk about loving ourselves, there's something in us that has a tendency sometimes to shut down, to feel that we aren't worthy, because we know ourselves so well that we know all our faults are. And it's just that old biological training. We notice what's wrong as opposed to all the things that are right. So we're very hard, very critical on ourselves. And sometimes that criticism is reckless. Think of how many times during the day that you say something that really isn't very flattering about yourself. It just comes out of your mouth. Oh, I did such a stupid thing. Or, you know, I am so fill in the blank. You know what those things are. Really becomes self-flagellation. We're beating up on ourselves. And then if you can think about the kryptonite, the prince of Superman's kryptonite, we have this thing, too, that we're going to protect ourselves from vulnerability, so we're going to take on, we're perfect. We may put up this whole front about perfection. And my favorite story to explain what perfection is a wonderful Jewish story about this town of Shalom. And it was time to build a new temple. So the men of the temple got together, and there was a mountain there, and they went up that mountain, and they carried down these huge boulders to make the base for the temple. And if they brought all these boulders down, the rabbi said to them, well, why didn't you just roll them down the hill? And they go, well, wouldn't that have been easier? So they went and took all those boulders back up to the top of the hill so they could roll it back down. Now, from that viewpoint, it seems very silly. But how many times in our life do we feel something's done, but it wasn't done perfectly? So we reroute and do the whole thing all over again. It's a lot easier to see when we're talking about a story about others, isn't it? And then there's that persona of human smallness, that so many of us do make ourselves small. We pull back from the situation just really because we've underwritten ourselves, just saying that we're not enough or that we're not worthy. We're making ourselves smaller and smaller and smaller as opposed to taking up our space and our potential within our world. I think this happens because the stories we tell ourselves of what's wrong with us, of what's broken in us, of how we're imperfect, is so paralyzing that we're not able to step forward. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Superman lived in Smallville. So many times those stories we have of our own imperfections came from our home, where we were raised. Those stories, you've heard the stories time and time again of somebody who, as an adult, does not sing, because as a child, somebody told them at one point, your voice is awful, just move your mouth, don't make any noise. And, you know, this goes, they carry that with them for such a long period of time. And it's years later, maybe they have a great voice by then, or maybe they would just enjoy singing. Who cares what it sounds like? But because that voice is there, they still live in that Smallville. So the kryptonite effect, if you want to really see where it's happening, think about where do you fixate on when something is wrong? This morning down at Unity, we didn't have any electricity, and it was really easy to fixate on the fact that we had no power when we got there this morning. And it took, you know, you had to recenter and go, okay, let's go from here, as opposed to thinking about what's wrong. That's not going to do anything. What we do think about is what we can do. And are you intolerant of your shortcomings? Are you comfortable with those places where you can't perform to where you'd like to perform, perhaps, or where you think others expect you to perform? Are you okay with yourself coming up a little bit short from time to time? What do you do with the parts of yourself that you don't like? That's a big one. I would suspect not one of us in the room likes every part of ourselves. But the key is, what do we do with those parts that we're not so happy about? And how do you treat yourself when you failed? How do you treat yourself when you're in pain? How do you treat yourself when you're alone? These are all those effects of that kryptonite of self-love, that we're not as kind to ourselves as we could be. We're not as kind to ourselves as we're... I think there's a natural instinct within us because of God being love, and we are that a creation of love itself. Our natural state is to love ourselves, but we've built up this persona that makes us not love ourselves quite as much as we could. How about body shame? That's a big one. You know, too fat, tall, skinny, short, clumsy, slow, too fast, whether that be, or out of proportion. You know, the nose is too big, the ears stick out too much, the eyes are too small, too much hair, not enough hair, feet too big, his lips too thin in the mouth. I mean, you can go on and on. We all have those little quirky things that we wish just a little bit different, just a little bit different. And we pick up this body shame, and if we're just a little bit suspect of it, there's wonderful media that helps to support us in that body shame by offering us all these things that could make us perfect. But remember, perfect is like taking those boulders back up the mountain. So there's a lot of opportunities for us to take on this idea that we are unworthy, that we are not as lovable as maybe we would like to be. I think it's about really becoming real. And one of my favorite inspirational books, you may have read it, The Velveteen Rabbit. And near the front of the book, there's this wonderful story. Rabbit's talking to the skin horse, who has been around for a couple generations in this family. And he says to the rabbit, real isn't how you are made. It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real. Isn't that true? Any of us that are feeling down, having a child play with us, you really feel that love and you start getting real again. And then Rabbit says, does it hurt? He goes, sometimes. When you are real, you don't mind being hurt. And that's true. You know, as we study new thought, as we become more and more connected to our spiritual nature, it does not insulate us from pain. It does not insulate us from grief. It does not insulate us from things happening. What it does do is give us better tools to deal with those things that happen in this experience called life. And the horse carries on. It said, it doesn't happen all at once. You become. It takes a long time. Isn't that nice to know that it's not that we're missing a switch, that we could just turn it on and be there and be done. Say, here it is. Here I am, done. He says, that's why it doesn't happen to people who break easily, who have sharp edges, or who have to be carefully kept. If you're not out there on the growing edge, living it, it's really hard to be real. Generally, by the time you're real, most of your hair has been loved off, your eyes drop out, and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. And some, I find that very comforting. That's how you know you've really been loved. He says, but these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly except to people who don't understand. You know, and here it is in a children's book, and it gives us such a sense of truth of what it is to be real. And when we deny our vulnerabilities, we're not being real. When we allow ourselves to step in to that idea of being vulnerable, of opening up our heart where we do feel the pain, that's when we become real, and that's when we really get the juiciness of life. So getting real, here's some tests for you. How would you treat someone else when certain things happen? When I used to teach young people back in Mississauga at Sunday school, and we had a technique that was very, I found it very effective. I use it with my grandkids too when they get going. And any time you heard a put down, you had to give three put ups. So I think getting real is the next time you hear yourself putting yourself down, oh, I was so stupid. Oh, I was so lazy. Oh, I was so, when you say that, then you have to say three things good about yourself. Yeah, that'll catch you. And if, you know, if you have a little notepad, it's not bad to write them down either, just to remind yourself on days when you're really having trouble coming up with those three really great things about yourself. Another way to get real is to watch your language. And in the early part of Unity, the Fillmores had a thing called the Good Word Club. And they made a pledge to watch their language. You know, it's amazing what comes out of our mouths sometimes without even thinking. And here was their pledge. It said, "Let there be good words on earth and let them begin with me." And that was before the peace song. "If I notice that I am not using good words or good actions, I will take a deep breath and start over again. For I know that it is that simple to start anew, to begin again." Isn't that a wonderful club to belong to? There's no way you can fail, because as soon as you realize that you said words that were not life-affirming, that were not joyful, that maybe even been harmful, you go, "Oh my goodness, okay," and take a deep breath, start again. Clean slate, just start again. Third way to get real is some physical comfort. And there are some people, some of us, that there are days that go by that we don't see another human, that we don't have physical contact. But the good news is, honest to goodness, you can give it to yourself. Just take a moment and give yourself a hug. Rub your arms a little bit. Maybe touch your cheek. Or put your hand over your heart. There's a real comfort there. There's a real comfort. And, you know, it would just take a minute to be kind to ourselves, to give ourselves that little pat on the back, that little touch on the heart, that little piece of tenderness in our life. We don't have to go outside of anything to do that, just to be kind to ourselves. And then the fourth is about compassionate self-affirmations. And I really think, because it's so easy, and we may have been taught over the years, to talk very critical about ourselves, that to really develop some language around self-affirmations is very beneficial. So how about, "I am whole and holy"? Let's try affirming that. "I am whole and holy. I'm a force for good in my world. I am a force for good in my world. I am perfectly imperfect. I am perfectly imperfect. And I am enough. I am enough." Right. Marianne Williamson wrote a piece of prose. Nelson Mandela shared it at one of his inaugural speeches. As I'm thinking about this vulnerability, I think her words are so appropriate. She said, "Our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us the most. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Who are you not to be? You are a child of God, and your playing small does not serve the world." We're here taking up room. Let's put it into our potential. So, to dare really greatly, carrying on with Brené Brown, showing self-compassion by embracing our vulnerability. And we do that by considering how we treat somebody else as being the way that we treat ourselves, to watch our language, to comfort ourselves with a physical gesture, and to learn compassionate self-affirmations that tell the truth about ourselves. And if you do this, I guarantee you, might be a week, it might be a month, or maybe it's next year at this time, somebody's going to say, "Who is that?" You're going to say, "Well, they're faster than the speed of thought. They're more powerful than an act of love. They are able to leap tall obstacles in a single phrase. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's you." With that, we're going to enter into a time of, there's Superman. Yeah, we're going to enter a time of meditation. We're going to sing "Our Thoughts, Our Prayers." Do we do that first? Sure, let's do that. Give us a little transition.